Morning. Today's daf in Bab Metzias, daf Nun. Thank the Lupin Foundation for sponsorship of the daf. Daf is on the Zechon Nishmas Libak Avayla Bashmuel. We're back on Mantes, we're on Mem Tes Amud Aleph. We're starting right in the middle of the Amud. Continuation of yesterday's Gemara. We were talking about down payments and whether or not a down payment is going to represent a full transaction of all the merchandise. And to that end, the Gemara made a very simple distinction between buying property versus buying movables. If you buy property and you put down a down payment, the down payment is going to reflect the full transaction. And makes sense, as the Gemara pointed out, because the means that you buy property is through money. So money becomes a vehicle in which you buy property. So as long as you put down kesef for the property, you buy the property. Even though the kesef itself doesn't represent the full value of the property, nevertheless, the kinyan has been done, and therefore you're the owner of all the property. But when you're talking about movables, so kesef is not the way that you buy movables, meaning that's not the method of kinyan. Obviously, you have to pay for the merchandise that you buy. In other words, that's what a transaction is, but in terms of what the method of kinyan is, the method of kinyan is meshicha, and money itself doesn't actually reflect a kinyan. So that means now that the question stands. If I'm paying for movables, if I'm paying for merchandise and I'm not putting down a full payment, so is that going to be considered a complete transaction on the entire item? Now, again, how does that relate? Because as we discussed yesterday, meaning if money is not the vehicle in which you make the transaction, so what are we asking now? If you pay half, if you pay full, if you pay the money before Mashiach is done, the transaction is not complete, it's not finalized. So as we pointed out yesterday, that's true, but still, once the money's put down, so you should not back out. Meaning you can back out, but you should not back out. Why should you not back out? Because the Mishnah says that there's going to be a curse on the person who, after money's been deposited, then if either party backs out, so then we have the klala, we have the curse of Misha Parah. So now this becomes a significant question, and we asked this question a number of different ways yesterday. But basically, let's say, for example, that I'm selling merchandise, and the guy comes, and the guy puts down a down payment, and the merchandise value goes up. So now I'm motivated to back out. I'm very motivated to back out because I want to now sell it at the new higher price. So can I back out? So this was the question that was asked to Rav, and that was asked to Rav Yochanan, and they debate on this issue, and therefore what came out is that the Rav was lenient. He says that the down payment for merchandise is only going to be commensurate to the merchandise that is that's equivalent to the payment. And Rav Yochanan says no, that when you put a down payment for merchandise, you have, the word acquired is too strong a word, we're not going to use the word acquired, but you have locked into all the merchandise, and now if the seller wants to renege, so he's now subject to the klala of Misha Parah. The Gemara quoted a brisa yesterday, and the brisa over here yesterday that we quoted seems to be in support of Rav Yochanan. Truth be told is that Rav Yochanan goes even one step further. Rav Yochanan says not only does money create a commitment, but even a verbal commitment creates a commitment. And Rav Yochanan taught us this yesterday, and the brisa seems to be supportive of that as well. The brisa discussed where the son of the employer went and negotiated and hired workers, and he made a number of contractual agreements, including free lunch. And dad, when dad heard about this, dad said, no, don't do that. Meaning free lunch, the workers are going to eat us out of the house and home. And so... And we will never contractually satisfy them. So dad went and he renegotiated the deal. So the Gemara says, and before they started working. So the Gemara says, now if dad renegotiated the deal before they started working, the implication is that even though the son made a verbal commitment, but it could be renegotiated. But the Gemara then ended up saying yesterday, yeah, but the workers knew that when they were first negotiating, they were negotiating with the son, and they knew that he wasn't the boss, he wasn't really in charge, and so that in that specific circumstance, so then even though you made a commitment, but that commitment can be reneged because the commitment wasn't being made by the boss, by the person who's really in charge. Okay, yeah.
Can we say that a verbal commitment is
ke'ilu
a neder? Because
otherwise, it's not. No, I mean, you. No. In other words, a neder is very specific. Meaning, we're learning. As long as we're learning right now, which you know. So, in other words, by neder is very specific. It's like a neder. Okay, fine. I'll give you that. But in other words, it doesn't take on the full form of a neder. Neder is very specific in terms of how to make a neder and how to be bound by a neder. So over here, a verbal commitment is just simply, you know, you gave your word. And as the Gemara Darshan yesterday, you know, your yes has to be yes, your no has to be no. You can't be duplicitous. But then as the Gemara itself pointed out yesterday, if at the time you said yes because of X, Y, and Z, and then the variables change, so then the Gemara says, so then you have a good argument. But other than that, in other words, at the time you say yes, you should be both in word and in thought, they should be on the same page. Now, this is where we left off yesterday. We are continuing the Gemara. We're halfway down to Mem Tes Amud Aleph. So, Umi Amar Rav Yochanan Hachi. Right, it is straight in the middle of the line. The line starts with the words Amar Meimar. So the Gemara now continues, and the Gemara questions whether or not Rav Yochanan actually said this. V'hamar Rabba Babachana Amar Rav Yochanan Amal Chaver Matana Ninosin Lach. So Yachol Achzabo. So if a person makes a commitment and says, I'm going to give you a gift. And then he says, and it's just a verbal commitment that he's going to give a person a gift, so he can retract from that verbal commitment. Yachol Pshita. So the Gemara says, now, can he retract? Gemara says, that I don't need a statement to Rav Yochanan. Of course he can. Meaning, we're not discussing his ability to retract. Of course he can retract, even though he made a verbal commitment. A verbal commitment is not a kinyan. So the Gemara says, Elamut alachzabos. So the Gemara says, no, what Rav Yochanan meant is that not only can he retract, but it's permissible for him to do so. Meaning it doesn't violate any Isser in the Torah whatsoever to make such a verbal commitment and to retract. So the Gemara says, so now we are at a little bit at odds. Because previously Rav Yochanan says that when you make a verbal commitment, you have to keep your word. And here, Rav Yochanan allows the gift giver, after having committed himself to making a gift, to retract from that gift. So Amar Rav Papa, Modi Rav Yochanan, Bematana Muatas, the Samcha Daitayu, the Samcha Daitayu. So the Gemara says, here's how we're going to address this. When you're talking about a small gift, so now I make a verbal commitment to give you a small gift. You, the recipient, understand that this is not a big deal, and so therefore you have what's called, what the Gemara repeatedly calls time and again, smichas das. Meaning, there is now an agreement of the mind. You are comfortable with the idea that he's a man of means, he committed, it's a small gift, fine, the commitment stands. But if I'm making a significant commitment, something that is not easy for me to do, so you understand that it's tenuous, that it's tentative. And so therefore, there's an understanding, says this is how we're understanding Rav Yochanan now, that even though you verbally committed to make such a significant gift, but you understand that there was no smichas das, it wasn't agreed, it was no agreement of mind between the two parties, because you know, he wants to do it. It'd be nice if he did it. But the understanding is that he may not end up doing it. Hachinami Mustafa, the Gemara says, and I'll tell you what. This is logical. Da'am Rabbi Abba, Amar Rav Yochanan, Yisrael Sharma Leben Levi, Kor Maiser Yeshli Biadi. So let's say a person goes over to a Ben Levi and he says, you know, I'm sorry, Kor Maiser Yeshlecha Biadi. So look, I have to take off my Sarisha. I always have to do it. So and I am now committing my Maaser Rishon to go to you. This is what he says to a Ben Levi, which is great. Now, remember, from the perspective of the Ben Levi, so when he gets his Maaser Rishon from the Yisrael, so before he eats it, he has to do the following. He has to take off 10% of the 10%. That's what's called Trumas Maaser. And he has to give that to the Kohen. Until he does that, he's not allowed to eat the Maaser Rishon. So what now is the Levi allowed to do? Now remember, from the perspective of the Levi, he was only committed to being given the 10% from the Yisrael. So Ben Levi, Rashi Allah Soso, Trumas Maaser, Amakom Acher. So what the Ben Levi is allowed to do is he's allowed to take 10% of the Maaser Rishon that was committed to him from another location in order to give it to the Kohen. Now, so the Gemara says, now let's consider. When I committed to give the Ben Levi my Maaser Rishon to him, he then is entitled to take 10% out of his own product and to give it to the Kohen. So if my verbal commitment, this is a binding verbal commitment, so then we understand everything. It makes perfect sense. But the Gemara says, but let's also consider. If let's say after I say to him, I'm going to give him my Ma'aser Rishon, I can now retract from my commitment. So am I Rashai? So the Gemara says, so now, how can the Ben Levi take off 10% Trumas Ma'aser and give it to the Kohen? Ishakech deka achot tvalim. What may end up happening is he may end up reneging from that. And now what comes out is that the Ma'aser Rishon never belonged to him. And now we're talking about the consumption of Tevel. So the Gemara says, okay, well maybe over here we're talking about an extraordinarily specific scenario in which not only did I commit the Ma'aser Rishon to the Levi, I actually gave him the Ma'aser Rishon as well. And then the Levi says to me, look, I'm not in a position right now where I can hold it. So you gave it to me, you physically handed it to me. Can I now hand it back to you and you be a custodian of the Ma'aser Rishon? The Gemara says that's what the Braisa is talking about. Yahachi, Emasefa, the Gemara says, I have a hard time imagining that's what the Braisa is talking about. Go to the next part of the Braisa. Nasal the Ben Levi, Acher, Ein lo alav el taramos. If you give it to another Ben Levi, so what are we looking at over here? Taramos. So you have a legitimate gripe, but that's all you have. You don't have anything other than a legitimate gripe. These Agadach, so the Gemara says, now, if we're giving the Ukimta where the Yisrael is actually handed over the Ma'aser Rishon to the Ben Levi, and then the Ben Levi says, do me a favor, just hold on to it. Now if that Yisrael were to give it to anybody else, what do you mean now that the Ben Levi only has Taramas? He only has a complaint. He can only file a complaint. He could do much more than file a complaint.
It was his.
He did a Mashiach. It belongs to him. You now, the Yisrael, have no right to give it to anybody else. Well, what are you doing? So the Gemara says, so we are right in our original understanding of the Braisa, that was no Mashiach, it was not given to him, and yet a verbal commitment is going to be binding. And again, this is supportive of Rabbi Yochanan, where the distinction we made in Rabbi Yochanan, if it's matana muatis, if it's a small gift, something that you can, it's within your ability to do so, and you make the commitment, the verbal commitment is going to be binding. Masha'enkin, if it's matana gadola, so then it's not going to be binding. Okay. A couple more stories before we move on to the next Mishnah. So a person gave money in order to secure a sale of sesame seed. So he basically wanted to buy sesame seed, and he put down the money. So now the price of the sesame seeds went up. So now the seller wanted to renege on the deal. Makes, again, from a financial standpoint, from a business standpoint, it makes sense. So the seller makes up a story to the buyer. Look, I'm really sorry, I don't have any sesame seeds. You'll just take your money back. So lo shekel zuzeh. So, and then the buyer refused to take back his money. I'm not taking back my money. I put the money down for sesame seeds. You have the sesame seeds. You're only reneging on the deal because the price went up. I'm not taking back my money. So it's a very unusual circumstance where now, it's not, I mean, every step that got us to this point made perfect sense. But now here's where we're at. We're now at the point where seller basically is reneging on the deal. The buyer says, I'm not reneging on the deal. You're holding my money, and I'm going to be, eventually, when you agree, you're going to be selling me the sesame seeds. And now the buyer, sorry, let me say that better, the seller now is reluctantly holding on to somebody else's money. Now, ignov. And then the case gets more compounded and more complicated. Now the money gets stolen from the seller. So the seller was a reluctant custodian on that money. Also, the Kamed Rava, so they go to Rav Amalei, Kamed Amalech, Shekol Zuzech, Lo Shakalta, Lo Mi Bayi Shomer Sachar De Lo Have, El Afisho Shomer Chinam Nami Lo Have. So Rava says, here's my ruling. My ruling is that he clearly did not want custodial responsibility on that money. He, the seller, said, I don't want the money. He, in fact, told you, take back your money. So at that point in time, he's not a Shomer Sachar, he's not a Shomer Chinam, he's not a Shomer at all, period. He clearly didn't want the money. So you cannot hold him to custodial liability when he didn't want to be a custodian on the money. So Amalei Rabban L'Rava V'Habai L'Kbulei Ala Mishapara. So they say to Rava, but wait one second. By him reneging on the deal, he's now subject to the curse of Mishapara. Isn't that something to consider? So Amalahu, Achinami.
Rava said, what do you mean it's something to consider? I considered that. Meaning, yes, he's subject to the klal of Mishapara. But that doesn't change the fact that he didn't want the money anymore. And he articulated that he didn't want any money anymore. Yes, it's true that now the seller is going to be on the hook for this curse of Mishapara. But that's his prerogative. He can accept that curse. The bottom line is he didn't want the money anymore. He told the buyer he didn't want that money anymore. Yes, he accepted a curse upon himself, but that's his prerogative. So, fine.
So in the way, Rava is saying that it's not right to do it.
It's not right to do it, but you could do it. Of course it's not right, meaning the Mishnah told us it's not right to do it. Once money was given, you shouldn't renege. But can you? Absolutely, you can renege. The sale's not, the transaction's not been finalized. And the only thing left for discussion now is, once he told the buyer, I don't want the money anymore, so then he's no longer a shomer. He has removed his shomer responsibilities.
That's
right. Amra Papi Amra Lei Ravina Lididi Amra Lei Ahume Rabbanan Rav Tevushme. So the Gemara now is going to have just a small adjustment of how the story went. Meaning that right now we were given one version of the story, and the story was told over, and in front of Rav Tevus, the Amri La Rav Shmuel Barzut Shoshme, okay, versions of who exactly was told over. Ihavu Yavu Lei Kol Chalala Da'alma Lahava Kamishanin B'dibura. So, and I know he's a man of integrity, you would give him anything in the world, and he still wouldn't change his position. Okay, so he was a man of serious integrity, and he says that you're not telling the story accurately. Here's the story accurately. I always wonder with these Gemaras, by the way, meaning we see this a number of times throughout Shas, where the Gemara is very precise in terms of how to tell over a story, which is totally perfectly understandable, meaning this is part of the Mesorah, and it's like the Gemara never entertains sometimes that it could be just simply two different stories by two different people. But the Gemara assumes over here that the story was told incorrectly. And he says, here's the correct version of the story. The story goes like this. It was an Erev Shabbos. It was right before Shabbos. And v'havi yasrin v'asa hugavra v'kaya bava. So, and there was a person there who's standing at the door. Amarli yisach shushim elizvune. And he says, I have sesame seeds that I'd like to sell. Top of mem tesam and base. Amri lei lo. So, I'm sorry. He asked me if I have sesame seeds to sell. So amri lei lo. So I said no. Apparently, sometimes he did. But anyway, well, that's unfortunate because I had money and I was ready to buy sesame seeds, but you don't have any sesame seeds to sell, so I have all this money. It's right before Shabbos. Could you do me a big favor? Right, Shabbos is about to start. Could you hold my money for me? So, dahachashkali. So, amrelei, besa kamach, uzvina bebesa. So, now the response over here, and just the wording over here is very critical. And so the wording of the homeowner is, my house is in front of you, you could put it in the house. Now, the wording over here, again, we don't, it's hard for us to hear this because back then you have to be much more familiar with what the lingua franca was, how people colloquially spoke to one another. But the Gemara's assumption is that's not an acceptance of Shmira. Meaning just simply say, in other words, if I were to give it the proper tone, I'd almost like add a little sarcasm to it. Like, whatever, here's my house. Like, you know, almost like an annoyance. Like, no, I'm not going to take on the responsibility of being a shomer over your money. You come to me right before Shabbos, and you're asking me if I have sesame seeds to sell. I say no. And now you're asking me to be a shomer on that money? Like, and I guess we would say in the more vernacular, whatever. So over here, in the more vernacular, whatever, yeah. You want my house? Fine. But I'm not taking upon myself the shmir responsibility. So v'ignov, and now the story goes where the money was stolen, and also come to Rav Amalei Kol Habesa Chamach Lo Bim Bay Shomer Sachar. Sorry, Lo Mi Bay Shomer Sachar Delo Have Elafil Shomer Chinam Nami Lo Have. So which Rava says in such a scenario, he is nothing, meaning he, the homeowner, accepted no kind of shmir, not Shomer Sachar, not Shomer Chinam. So, because just to simply say that my house is in front of you is not an acceptance of being a shomer. Okay, and this is the correct version of the story. So now, in the correct version of the story, so there was no transaction. Meaning there was an attempted transaction, but just a rejection flat out, simply because the homeowner had no sesame seeds to sell. And then the story went on. but there was no transaction. To which the Gemara says, so let's go back to our first version of the story. So then, in the first version of the story, in the incorrect version of the story, we had the conclusion of, what about the Mishapara? Over here, there is no curse of Mishapara. The curse of Mishapara is when there was an agreement of a sale, money was put down, and then there was a consequent reneging. Over here, none of that happened. There was no agreed transaction. So what are we going to do with the words Mishapara? So, in the corrected version of the story, what we're going to have to do is we're going to have to edit and actually delete that entire portion of the story. That portion of the story never happened because there was no accepted transaction. Okay. Mem Tesam and Beis, we are at the two dots. Rabbi Shimon Omer Kol Shehakesef Biyado Yado Al Yonah. Rabbi Shimon says, who can reneg? So the one who's holding the money. The Tanyam, Rabbi Shimon Emes HaBizman Shehakesef HaParis Biyad Mocher. That is only when the money and the Paris are in the hand of the seller. Aval Kesef Biyad Mocher, Paris Biyad Lokeach. But if the money is in the hand of the seller and the fruit is in the hand of the buyer, Eino Yachal Achzer Bo, so there you can't retract. Mimnei Shekasva Biyado. So So, because the money's in the hand. So the Gemara says, what just happened over here? Had he picked up on it right away? What just happened over here? Meaning, let's think this through. The seller now is holding the money. The buyer now is holding the product. You can't retract. Of course you can't retract. Everybody is holding what they should be holding at the end of a transaction. So the Gemara says, Biyado, biyad mocherhu. So Ella, the Gemara says, what just happened over here? So Ella mimnesha demei kasba biyado. So the Gemara says, no, okay. What we mean is that the demei kasef, meaning the value of the money, meaning the product is still in the hand of the mocher. That's what we mean when we say kesef. So the Gemara says pshita. The Gemara says okay, but that's obvious. So the Gemara says we're talking about a very specific scenario in which the aliyah shalokeach, meaning the buyer. Now, generally speaking, the way transactions work is that the seller is going to be giving the product over to the buyer, or I should say more accurately, the buyer is going to be mosheh. Over here in our specific scenario, we're talking about where the property of the seller is rented out to the lokeach. And other way around. The mocher is actually renting out space in the lokeach. Now, generally speaking, why is it? Now, again, we're assuming like Rabbi Yochanan that really money does work, and it's only the chachamim who blocked the efficacy of money. So the Gemara says that, and why? Why did the chachamim block it to protect the buyer? Over here, over here in this, in our specific scenario, we're talking about where the mocher was renting space in the house of the lokeach. So now we're no longer in the house of the mocher, we're in the house of the lokeach. Now we know that if a fire breaks out, the lokeach is going to be very motivated to put out the fire. Why? Because it's his house. And the Gemara just finishes up by telling us what the psak is. How garved yaiv zuze achamra. Person gave money for a for wine. And then the Gemara, and then there was a man by the name of Parzuk. He was a viceroy to the king. And Amalei Havli Zuze Lo Beina Chamra. So he says, what he tries to do now is he tries to back out of the deal. Give me back my money. I don't want the wine. Also coming to Rav Chisda Amalei Kederach Shetiknu Mashicha B'Mochin Kach Tiknu Mashicha B'Lekuchas. And the Gemara is ruling like Rav Chisda is, that just like we give the seller the ability to renege, we also give the buyer the ability to renege. Both parties have the ability to renege before the point of Mashicha. Okay. And that's right. And the Gemara assumes that that's the halacha, meaning we do follow like Rav Chisda. Okay. Being that that's stated, that now takes us to the end of part one of the fourth parak about Metzia. With our Mishnah coming up right now, we are going to be starting the second part of the fourth parak about Metzia, and we're now going to be discussing the Isser of the Isser in the Torah of Ona'a. And this will take us to the end of the fourth parak. Okay, the Isser of Ona in the Torah is the following. Now, Ona comes in one of two forms. There's Ona's Mammon, and there's Ona's Devarim. Basically, I'm not allowed to exploit another person. Okay? I'm not allowed to abuse another person. I'm not allowed to exploit another person. We're going to speak about it in terms of finances, and we're going to speak about it in terms of words, of devarim. In terms of abuse, physical abuse, so that's back in Baba Kama, meaning that you're not allowed to cause any type of bodily damage to another person. So that's another pasuk in the Torah, and that's another parak in Shas. We discussed that extensively in the 8th parak of Baba Kama. We are now going to be talking about exploitation financially. The Torah says that one is not allowed to be, well, the pasuk in the Torah is lo sonu ish es achiv. The word onah in of itself is basically exploitation. I mean, I'm not sure if there's a great English word to use to describe it, but it's basically it's basically taking advantage of another person. So, what is financial onah? So we're going to be discussing it in one of three categories. Okay, anytime I overcharge or undercharge for an item, a person in the transaction is going to get taken advantage of. If I overcharge, so then the buyer is going to be taken advantage of. If I undercharge, so then the seller is being taken advantage of. So, and it can work in one of two ways. It can work in either way. What are going to be the benchmarks of overcharging and undercharging? First of all, you'll hear me say this a number of times, it is over and under what is fair market value. An additional point to consider, which the Gemara already told us, and we're going to hear this again, is that we're only talking about metalton, we're talking about movable items. When it comes to karka, there's no onah when it comes to karka. There's no overcharging and undercharging. There's no isser of overcharging and undercharging. Now, the Gemara says it very flatly, and as I pointed out before, just mention it very quickly again, to be shown him talk about whether or not there's any kind of benchmark or guideline of onah when it comes to property. But for our purposes right now, we are discussing merchandise. We're talking about movables. Okay, and it goes like this. They're basically, the benchmark is 1/6, which, if you want to think like, you know, the way you and I normally think, it's 16 2/3%. So that means as follows. If I'm charging under ona'a, so, now obviously I shouldn't do it, meaning I shouldn't charge anything over or under what is the fair market value of an item, but if I charge under 16%, so we say that mekach kayim, that the sale is a sustained sale, and we will discuss throughout the course of the Gemara, it comes up in today's daf already, of whether or not there is an instant mechila on whatever is over or under. We'll discuss that later, but if it's anything under 16%, so then mekach chayim. If it's anything over 16 2/3%, so then mekach bato. The sale is voided immediately. And then at 16 2/3%, which is a 6, which means that if the item is valued at 6 and I sell it for anything 1 over, exactly, 1 over or 1 under, so now from the point of what the value of the item is, we are now at the point of onah. What happens at this point in time? Now you have an option. You can either keep the sale as a sustained sale, mecho kayim, but you're going to have to return the difference. Or the other option is you could be mevato. You can just simply nullify the sale. So those are our three points, either under onah, over onah, or at exactly the point of onah. Okay. This is the basics that we need to know. Let's start with the Mishnah. Onah arba kesef masrim v'arba kesef lesela shesus lemekach. So the Mishnah starts off by just giving us our basic numbers. What is onah? Onah is 4 to 24, or what we would call 1 to 6. The Mishnah uses the numbers of 4 to 24, even though obviously from a ratio standpoint, it's the same as 1 to 6, because the coins back then were the ma'a kesef, and there were 24 ma'os in a... there are 24 ma'os in a sela, so that's just... In other words, that was just a popular coinage at the time. So therefore, of the 24 ma'os, if you charge 4 over or under, that's exactly the point of onah. Parenthetically, every time we say the word onah, the assumption is you hit it dead on. Meaning it's not over, it's not under. Okay. So, ad masay motala hachzir, ad kideshir latagra olakrovo. Now, in terms of... is there going to be a statute of limitation? The Mishnah says, you bet there is. And that is going to be the amount of time that it takes to show the product to either another merchant or to your relative in order to have him assess how much it's worth and how much you paid for. Okay. Now, I know that's not a precise shear in terms of a time interval. Let's assume that this represents a constant time frame. Okay. whatever the case is. That's the shear of point of discovery. Now, Rabbi Tarfon Balod, I'm sorry, Hori Rabbi Tarfon Balod, Ha'una Shmona Kesef Me'asim V'Arba Kesef, L'Sela Shlisha Mekach. Rabbi Tarfon comes up with the following ruling, and that is that the shear of Anah is not 1/6, but rather it's 1/3. If we're dealing with a ma that of 24 maos, that means that only at the point of 8 have you hit the ona. Now that is twice as much as the shear of the chachamim. I don't know how to explain to you, because I don't understand how it is that could be such a wide discrepancy between what is the shear of ona. Either it's a 6 or it's a 3rd. The difference between 16% versus 33%. That's a wide discrepancy. I don't know how you can have such a wide range, but that's a machlokus. Now, if you lived in Rabbi Tarfon's community and you were a merchant, you were obviously happy. And the Gemara and the Mishnah actually reflects that reaction. V'samchu Tigrei Lod. And the Tigrei Lod, the merchants in Lod, were ecstatic. Imagine that now they have the right to overcharge up to 33% over what is fair market value. Made them very excited. Amalem kolayom mutalachzor. So Rabbi Tarfon says, oh, by the way, I have another psak as well. And that is that my time of discovery is the entire day. So in other words, sale's not going to be finalized until the day's over, and my point of discovery will be the entire day, which is much longer than what the Chachamim allowed in terms of discovery, point of discovery, which is only the amount of time that you have to show it to another merchant. So, Amru lo yaniach lanu Rabbi Tarfon bimkameinu v'chazlo divrei Chachamim. So at which point the Tigrei Lod says, you know what, you can take your 33% and you can keep it. Meaning that, and we're going to explore this later on this morning, that is that the Tigrei Lod would much rather have the shorter discovery time, even though the cushion of Onah is much smaller. Well, it's only capped now at 16%, but they'd rather have the smaller discovery time and the smaller percentage of 16%, rather than the much greater 33%, but a discovery point of the entire day. And that's something we're going to be discussing in much greater detail over the course of this morning. But our first discussion today revolves around a machlokes between Rav and Shmuel. We start with the Gemara Mem Tes Amud Beis Itmar Rav Amar Shesus. You could say immediately. The Mishnah says the amount of time it takes to go to the next merchant and ask him to help you appraise the item. So whatever the time is, it's a much smaller time. It my Rav Amar Shesus Mekach Shaninu Shmuel Amar Shesus Maos Nami Shaninu. Okay, so here's the machlokes between Rav and Shmuel. Okay, well, so we know what the shear of Ona is. It is 1/6, 16 2/3%. Okay, we know that. Is it relative to the price of the item? Or is it also relative to the money as well? So we're going to give very simple mathematical examples, and you'll see how this plays out. So, shavishisa bechamisha, shavishisa b'shiva kolei amalo pligi debasamekha chazlinan v'ona havya. So let's say the product itself, the merchandise itself, was worth 6. So now it's worth 6. So what is the shear of ona? Well, that's easy. Right, if the shear of Ona is 1/6 and the product itself is 6, so the shear of Ona is 1. So that means that if you are charging 1 over or 1 under, and your starting point is 6, so then you've hit Ona. So the Gemara says, fine. So now, from that standpoint, we're all in agreement that this now represents Ona. Now remember, as I said in the Mishnah, I'll repeat it again. When we say Ona, we mean you landed on the head. Where now you have hit the point of Ona, which again allows an option of either we'll just negate the sale, we'll void the sale, or sale stands, but I'm going to reimburse that one. So the Gemara says there's no disagreement. That is clearly an example of Ona. Rav and Shmuel both agree. Ki pligi, the Gemara says, here's where we're going to disagree. And that's the following scenario. Shavei chamsha b'shisa. Well, let's say the item was worth 5. And it was sold for 6. Or shavei shiva b'shisa. Or the item was worth 7 and it was sold for 6. So you see now from the perspective of the merchandise, if it was 5 and it was sold for 6, that is more than 16%. So if our starting point is the merchandise itself, so now we have exceeded Ona. And we should say Batal Mekach. However, if we now just flipped the camera and went from the perspective of how much money was paid, So the money that was paid was 6. The product value was 5. So from the perspective of the money, it actually is exactly ona. Or let's do it the other way. Let's say that the product was worth 6 and you spent 7. The product was worth 7. That's right. Okay. The product was worth 7 and you spent 6 in order to buy it. So now again, from the perspective of the product, it was under 16%, right? But so therefore, the mekach should be kayim. The sale should sustain. On the other hand, from the perspective of the money, it actually was, it is exactly a 6. So the Gemara says, so now Shmuel, Damar Basa Malzaz Linan, so Shmuel says that when we're looking at Ona'a, we're looking at it from both perspectives. In other words, from the perspective of the product price versus the money, or from the perspective of the money relative to the product price. E-D-V-E-D Ona'ave. And Shmuel will tell you that under both circumstances, that is considered ona. Whereas opposed to L'Rav, Damar Basar Mekach Hazlinan, and Rav says, no, there is only one vantage point that we look at ona, only from the perspective of the product price. If now the money that's spent is either 1/6 above or 1/6 below, that's ona. Above that, meaning when I say above that, meaning I'm just going to use percentages because it's just easier to communicate. If it's, let's say, anything above 16 2/3%, sale voided. If it's anything below 16 2/3%, sale sustains. So according to Rav, that's the only vantage point that we look at ona from the perspective of product to the money that's being.
We're assuming that both people are aware.
Yeah, of course. Meaning, well, again, yes. Well, at the time, maybe not, because, in other words, a person didn't know what it was appraised, what's a proper appraisal. But from the point of discovery, meaning, remember, there's a cushion that allows for the point of discovery. So up until the point of discovery, somebody discovers. So then, yes, now it's going to be ona. So, Basa Mekach Shave. So, Idvi ona Have, the Rav Damar Basa Mekach Hazlina Shave Chimsha Beshisa Bitl Mekach Have, Shave Shiva Beshisa Mechila Have. Okay, and from Rav, no, since we only have one vantage point, and that is only from the perspective of the product price relative to the money, so if the product is worth 5 and you spent 6, so now you have exceeded 16%. If the product itself was valued at 7 and you spent 6, it's less than 16%. Fine. And so Rav says there's only one vantage point, and that's only the starting point is the product price, and the comparison is how much money was spent to that. Ushmul amar ki amina mechilo bitul mekach hecha daleka shesus mishnei tzadim aval hecha deika shesus mitzad echad ona havya. And Shmuel says no, that and I don't know what the Gemara is adding over here with this point, but Shmuel says that ona is looked mishnei tzadim, it's looked from both angles, meaning that we get to look at ona both from the perspective of product price to money, and also from money to product price. So in either way, Shmuel will tell you that if we hit a 6 in either direction, we have violated the Isser of Ona.
Shouldn't we use the perspective of the Torah? The Torah always uses, it says a fifth, we'll add a fifth, it's really 45%.
We're not debating right now how to measure fractions. Meaning, how to measure fractions, you're right, milagav, milabar, milagav, that's its own discussion. What we're discussing over here is, let's assume that a 6 is 16 2/3 percentage points. Okay, and let's just assume that that's a given. That's a constant. And now the question is, what is going to be our gauge for it's 16 2/3? Is it from the product, and then from there we either go up or go down 16 2/3, or is it also, which is according to Shmuel, and Shmuel agrees, by the way, yes, it's going to be from the perspective of the product, but it's also according to Shmuel going to be from the perspective of the money. So in other words, if the money that you spent is either exactly a 6 above and below the product, Shmuel says that's also ona. Ona is looked from both vantage points.
There's no solid purchase until the time lapses.
Right, basically. Right. Correct. Which is why, and again, we're going to talk about this later, that's why Tigray Lud, you know, they went ballistic. You know, when Rabbi Tarfon, although giving them a 33% cushion, But once you have the entire day for discovery, so Tigre and Lud went out of their mind.
You cannot have
right.
Purchase.
Right. So, and again, that's coming up later. Tanan, we learned in our Mishnah, Ona Adala Kesef Me'atzrim V'Arba Kesef L'Sela Shesus L'Mekach. So now, in terms of seeing the Mishnah from Rav and Shmuel's perspective, which one seems to be making more sense? So the Mishnah says, well, it's 4 to 24. Now, it's not clear exactly which way we're going. So my lav dezavin shavi esrim be'esrim varba. So the Gemara says, oh, you know what the Mishnah is talking about? The product was worth 20, and you spent 24. So now, from the perspective of the money, we hit it straight on. Meaning, that is the 6. Ushma minash, shesus maus na mishaninu. So the Gemara says, now if that's the right way to understand the Mishnah, that's a nod to Shmuel. Because from the money perspective, it's exactly a 6. So the Gemara says, "Lo, dezavin shavin esrin, esrim ve'arba be'esrim." So the Gemara says, "Well, no, that's not the case of the Mishnah. The case of the Mishnah is that it was worth 24 and you spent 20. Oh, in other words, from the perspective of the product, it was a 6. So minin tana mocher. So the Gemara says, okay. So the item was worth 24 and it was sold for 20. So who got taken advantage of? The seller. So the Gemara says, yeah, but the Mishnah is not talking about the seller. How do I know that? Eima seifa. Ad masai motala haqsa bichte shir ala tagar o la krovo. Because the Mishnah then talks about a window of time for discovery. Now, on that, we don't know this yet, but the Gemara foreshadows. V'amar avnach maloshan o lokech av amokhil olam chozer. Now, this window of discovery is only for the buyer, not for the seller. The seller has an indefinite time of discovery to see whether or not he got taken advantage of. Now, we're going to discuss this later on. I'll say it very quickly now. Why? Why should there be such a distinction? The answer is really simple. Because when the buyer buys the item, so he's holding the item. It's easy for him to appraise how much the item is worth, being that now he's holding the item. The seller no longer has the item on his possession. How does he know if he got taken advantage of or not? Exactly. Meaning,
the seller is overselling the items, so he should be more aware of the price than the buyer.
Understood. I totally understood, but in terms of this window of time of discovery, so Rav Nachman says it's only for the buyer, not for the seller. So I now know, according to Rav Nachman, that the Mishnah is only talking about the buyer, not the seller. So the Gemara says, so now, what exactly happened in terms of what was the price discrepancy? So the Gemara says, fine. So we're talking about where the buyer got ripped off, but you know what the numbers are? The price of the item was actually 24. The buyer bought it for 28. Okay, now everything works out. Now the Mishnah is talking about from this perspective of where the buyer got taken advantage of. And in terms of the numbers, it comes from the vantage point of from the product to how much money was spent. Meaning it's only a 6 from product to money, not from money to product. So the Gemara says, okay, so we could set up our whole Mishnah, and it's not necessarily a support for Shmuel. Tanan, let's go on. Hori, Rabbi Tavon below now, Shmona Kesef, Me'atzrim V'Arba, Kesef L'Sela, Shlish L'Mekach. We're going to do the same thing now for Rabbi Tavon. Again, Rabbi Tavon now allows a discrepancy of 8 to 24, or 33%. My lab. So the Gemara says, let's say the item itself is worth 16 and was sold for 24. So now, from the perspective of product, so this is 50%. So the Gemara says, so it's only from the perspective of money to product. Is it going to be 33%? So the Gemara says, okay, so it would, if we're right, that's a big if. So then this would be supportive of Shmuel. That Onah can also be from the perspective of money to product. So the Gemara says, So the Gemara says, no, but you, right, our assumption was wrong. The product was actually worth 24 and it was sold for 16. So the Gemara says, Minitana Mocher. But then we back up right into the same problem. So who got taken advantage of? The seller. So the Gemara says, Amaseifa. But we know the Mishnah is not talking about the seller. Because Amalem Kolayam Mutalach, Amar Rav Nachman Loshanu Alokech, Av Mocher Lolam Choser. So the Gemara says, but remember, Rav Nachman told us that the window of discovery is only for the Lokech, not for the Mocher. The Mocher has an indefinite time to discover how much the item is worth. Ala Dezavin, Shavich Avdal, Betasim Etrain. So the Gemara says, fine. So you know what the Mishnah is? The Mishnah is talking about a case where the item was valued at 24, it was sold for 32. Now the buyer got ripped off, and meaning ripped off, meaning exactly at the point of onah, and now our numbers match where, from the perspective of the product, it is a third greater than that. Tanya Kavasi Dishmol, the Gemara now finishes off the whole discussion with, although there's machlok between Rav and Shmuel, and although our Mishnah can go in either direction, here's a brisa, and the brisa clearly goes like it goes like Shmuel. Here's how the brisa goes: Misha huta alav yadol al yona, the one who was taken advantage of, he has the upper hand. Let's explain. Ketzad machlo shavehei bivav. If the item was valued at 5 and it was sold for 6, now remember, if the item is valued at 5 and it's sold for 6, from the perspective of the item, a 6 exceeds 16%. So, minetan alokeach. So, but nevertheless, we are now talking about ona'a. Why are we talking about ona'a? Because the Braisa clearly is nodding in approval of Shmuel, that ona'a can go from either perspective, from product to money, or from money to product. So, minetan alokeach, yad alokeach, alayona. Well, since the lokech was the one who got, quote-unquote, ripped off, so therefore, he can now make the decision. Ratz Omer, ten li ma'osei. Either he can ask for a refund, or ten li ma'ashin et ana, or he can, or you're just going to give me back, you'll give me back a full refund, or you'll just give me a difference. Machalo, shavem. Sorry, we're now on the top of Daf Nun. Machalo, shavem shesh b'chamesh. And if the value of the item was worth 6 and it was sold for 5. Now here it happens to be ona'a from the perspective of a product. But minetana mocha. So here the mocha got ripped off at exactly the point of ona'a. Yad mocha alayona. Ratzo omer leten li mechi, oten li masho nisani. So again, the two options over here is either give me the item back, or give me the difference of ona. This brisa certainly is a support for Shmuel that the isser of ona, the point of ona can come in either perspective, from product to money, or from money to product. Ibailu. Here, let's just start with the Gemara's question. We'll continue tomorrow. Pachas mishesus l'rabanan. I told you this was coming up. Here, the Gemara asked the question straight up. Meaning, we know we have three levels of ona: under ona, at ona, or above ona. Under ona, what exactly happens? The Gemara's question. So, pachus mishesus l'rabanan la'ato havi mechila bechtei shiur l'tago l'krovo. Is it that under ona, it's an immediate mechila? Meaning, okay, you overcharge, but it was under 16 2/3 percentage points. You overcharge by 10%. So do we say immediate mechila or no? Maybe over here also we allow for a window of discovery time as well. Now, if we allow for a window of discovery time, so then it begs the question, what's the difference between hitting the point of ona versus under ona? Ika, the Gemara says, no, there's a difference. You see, if you hit the point of ona exactly, now there's options. The one who has got ripped off, now is the option of either the refund me the difference, or full refund. But however, but if it's, let's say, 10% overcharge, here there's no option. There's just simply a demand of the refund of 10%. My tashma. So the Gemara now is going to try to arrive at a conclusion of what exactly is going to happen according to the Chachamim if, let's say, it was an overcharge but under 16 2/3%. What exactly happens? We will continue this discussion tomorrow.